Yeah, we're rolling.
Fratelloni's heart. Just a minute. This thing is
one moment, please.
Falling down.
Oh, you almost said a naughty word.
I didn't.
I'm not done show prepping here. Let's give it another working.
Fratelloni's Hardware and Garden Stores brings you Garage Logic Podcast number 1259, March 5th, 2024. This was the day of the earliest 70-degree temperature on record. That happened in 2000, but of course that was eclipsed 2 days ago on Sunday. So there's a new date for the earliest 70 in Feb, and that would be March 3rd, which we'll note next year. And it was 14 below on this day in 1960, and I can tell you those early 60s were very chilly.
Hail the flashlight, King!
And now, from the mayor's office above the boathouse on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Chris Reavers manning Technology Corner, Kenny Olson from the Krabby Coffee Shop, John Height in the newsroom, and of course, the rookie. Here is your flashlight king, fireworks commissioner, and the keeper of common sense, your mayor, Joe Soucheray.
As the Grand Poobah, I'm sure you already know that the vernal equinox coming on March 19 is when the number of hours of daylight surpasses the hours of nighttime darkness, signaling the beginning of summer for 21sters. But what you might not know is that over the past weekend, according to the Weather Underground website, the number of hours of visible daylight surpassed 12 hours, giving all 21sters an even earlier ray of sunlight hope. Add those 2 extra weeks of visible light to the same in the fall, and you have a month more visible daylight than nightlight when the calendar...
Huh?
What? Mike, just a bit outside Phoenix for now. And P.S., don't give me that worn-out Minnesota refrain, yeah, it's nice now, but we're going to pay for it later. Just take it for what it is and enjoy it. I will note that it was as recently as 2018... we had about, I don't know, 26, 27 inches of snow in April. Mm. Of course, winters are done, so yeah, that won't be a problem.
Do you guys realize that this weekend is already daylight savings?
Yeah, is that early?
I thought so as well, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. That's where we spring forward, Joe.
No, spring ahead.
Spring ahead. Turn the clock ahead.
Right. Turn the clocks back.
Should we take a white privilege test today? I have the test.
Oh, boy.
Sure. Well, we might get to it. We might take a white privilege test.
Do you have to prepare? I mean, do you have to study for it?
Pass. No, I think just being white is our prep.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to get a few emails of old business out of the way. Chris writes, "Hail the flashlight king."
Hail you.
I was listening to a recent podcast in which you and the boys were discussing Senator Jen McEwen, DFL. She's up Duluth way, but she's from Carbondale, Illinois. And her proposed legislation attempting to outlaw the use of lead shot used by the widely popular Minnesota State High School Clay Target League. Last night, a local television news crew interviewed Senator McEwen regarding her proposal, pointing out the fact that doing so would nearly double the cost for those participating. Senator McEwen, ever the all-knowing legislator, couched her opposition to lead shot from the position that no amount of exposure to lead can be good for our frail youth. Senator McEwen offered no scientific evidence that participating in trap leagues presents any danger to the boys and girls participating. But there was a bit of evidence as to her motive lurking in the background of her office. When Senator McEwen began to spout her tripe about the dangers of lead, I paused the broadcast. He may have seen a Duluth newscast. I paused the broadcast to read a framed document sitting behind her in her office. It was a priceless peek into the mindset of the existing ruling class currently at the state capitol. It read, "If you give me a fish, you have fed me for a day. If you teach me to fish, then you have fed me until the river is contaminated or the shoreline seized for development. But if you teach me to organize, then whatever the challenge, I can join together with my peers and we will fashion our own solution."
It's a long saying.
Wow. I was nearly brought to tears by this wonderful, witty bit of prose, not for the value of what it had to say, but for the fact we've turned over control of the state political leadership to small-minded micromanagers, the likes of Senator McEwen, who apparently identifies as a medical doctor with her proselytizing about the dangers of lead, always pushing back from the land of rocks and cows, Chris Johnson. Isn't that an amazing sign she has in her office? If you give me a fish, you have fed me. If you teach me to fish, you have fed me until the river is contaminated or the shoreline seized for development. But if you teach me to organize, then whatever the challenge, I can join together with my peers and we will fashion our own solution. Okay, Senator, thank you. And my idea on the homeless, Willard Anger weighs in and it says, I suspect you will be excoriated by GLers for your proposal to let the homeless clan have their way. I will not do so, as I have previously given this some thought, but I will say this, it won't work. There are too many moving parts, how to get supplies, security, healthcare, etc. However, the meat of the problem with your proposal is this. You would be giving a pass to a group of people who have no regard for law and order or infrastructure to make some semblance of law and order on their own. Given the amount of drug addiction or mental illness among this population, I do not foresee a good outcome. It would just be a pocket of anarchy amid civilization, a little bit like the Minneapolis City Council. Any idea like this might work, but you'd have to go whole hog and, you know, setting up an area somewhere and providing the basics, and he doesn't see anyone agreeing to that, and he's probably right. You know, I have ideas. Sometimes they stick, sometimes they don't. You know?
I thought about this yesterday, and all I could remember, communes?
Yes.
That's kind of what I was thinking of, only perhaps there wasn't that much of a drug element, or perhaps there was in communes.
What would you say your batting average is with your ideas?
Oh, boy. I'd like to give myself 50%, but that's probably optimistic.
I think so.
Say, John brought up communes, and it reminded me, we had a commune a few miles north of where I live now in the early 70s called the Rhubarb Farm. And now, ironically, it's no longer a commune, but the county tax assessor lives there.
Really?
So if you want to put those two together, you see what...
Purely coincidental.
See what happens with communes.
Was it a hippie place?
Hippie farm, yeah. Hippie farm.
The book I'm reading has at its core a hippie farm in... Denmark.
Doesn't it paint a really dirty, as in dirt and grime and gross in the mind's eye? Like, take a shower,
well,
go down to the creek?
To quote the great Patrick Royce, I like hygiene.
Yeah. Maybe somebody could donate some deodorant.
Peaky Blinders to me was one of the great works ever offered on television. And he won't watch it because he doesn't like the lack of hygiene.
Yeah.
Well... Okay. I can point out worse. But he loves Slow Horses, in which the lead character, Gary Oldman, playing Jackson Lamb, is the least hygienic person on earth.
I see.
But that's part of the plot. Nevertheless, can we talk about money?
Sure.
We talk about money? There's a number of examples, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Where to begin?
The light rail could be coming to new communities in the metro, but at a cost. The Metropolitan Council wants to extend the Blue Line, which runs between the Mall of America and Target Field. By the way, don't you have some material regarding the Blue Line?
Thank you for reminding
me. The Green Line is St. Paul to Target Field. The Blue Line is Target Field to the Mall of America. And you were telling me off air that you had some correspondence with a listener who traveled the Blue Line and had observations.
Not a listener, but I saw this posted on social media. A woman and her husband took the Blue Line from the Mall of America downtown, and they made some observations.
All right.
Bear with me while I find it.
Okay. Well, then I'll continue reading. The proposed Blue Line route would head north another 13 miles past Brooklyn Park. The council said it would help boost ridership and connect communities that need access to public transit. I'm only reading this because one of the great quotes in the world is coming up. Right now, the project is expected to cost between $2.9 billion and $3.2 billion. But let me add, in my own words, that this is the Met Council, which has screwed up every projection they've ever made.
Yeah, that's the starting block.
Right. That means it would likely cost more than the controversial Southwest Light Rail project between Minneapolis and Eden Prairie, which was unneeded. That project remains still in the works after years of delays and cost overruns. And remember, this is all brought to you by unelected people.
Mm-hmm.
Planners argue that this price tag is consistent with national trends for similar projects, but also argued there is a qualitative benefit as well. Let me stop right there. Planners argue that this price tag is consistent with national trends. So in other words, we're supposed to be happy with the fact that this gets screwed up everywhere.
Right.
So we're just
in line. We're all in the same boat.
We're just in line to suffer the same punishment. Here's the quote of the year.
I'm ready for you.
Ridership isn't just about the number of people riding. Ridership isn't just about the number of people riding. It's
right.
Also about who we are serving. And I guess I would add parenthetically, even if they don't ride on it.
Right.
This is a generational equity investment in communities of color that have historically been underinvested in. I'm not buying this. Hennepin County Commissioner Irene Fernando said, it will guarantee premium transit service in communities of color who rely on transit every day to get to work. And then I'll add, except if they don't use it. They use it to get to work, school, healthcare, family, and opportunities. Sure. These communities have experienced a history of underinvestment and racial disparities stemming from generations of systemic racism. Okay. They deserve the same level of investment as others benefiting from light rail investments in our region. The project estimates for ridership and cost will still need to undergo the process of being reviewed. Environmental studies are also still in the future as well, should it move forward. Well, it should not move forward. But one thing elected people have forgotten is that oftentimes it displays great and needed leadership to not spend money. St. Paul is going through this with a proposed streetcar down 7th Street and rebuilding the bridge over the river to get to the airport.
That's nice.
There is no clamor for this. There is no demand for this.
But Joe, ridership isn't about the number of riders.
But, and Rafael Ortega would be the kingpin on this, and I've begged him. I said, Rafael, oftentimes not spending money displays great leadership. This is a forgotten virtue in our elected officials.
How'd that go?
What'd he say? I wrote a column about it. He never responded.
Oh.
But spending money is not always the way to go. And here is a blue line extension that, again, based on the Met Council, could cost up to $3.2 billion. Well, because it's the Met Council, you should not believe that figure. We don't know what the figure would be, but we're supposed to swallow this preposterous nonsense that ridership isn't just about the number of people riding.
It's not.
It's about us demonstrating that we're going to put it there, and I guess hope you ride it.
My husband and I rode the LRT from MOA to Minneapolis to St. Paul, then back the same route for a hockey game on the 27th. OMG. The ride from Minneapolis to St. Paul had an unbelievable amount of trash in the car that we had to kick out of the way so as not to trip and fall, and a space to place our feet to sit, people running around, smoking cigarettes.
Slow down.
Walking up and down the aisle. It's kind of a long one.
Well, slow down.
And then a group sat together and were opening up a foil-wrapped substance, which we found out later from a police officer was actually fentanyl, in the car that we rode on. While on that ride, I started texting the emergency number posted on the wall of the car that we were in. By the time we were at our stop, there was a police officer that had stopped and followed us off. He walked and talked with us and told us the drug was fentanyl. He said it goes on constantly and that the St. Paul transit is really bad, constantly. He also told us never to ride the center cars, always ride the first car or the last car. He also told us to complain about this to anyone we can get this because we need to get this bleeping stuff under control. After the game, we had to wait at the nearest transit station in St. Paul, again for around 20 minutes, for the next train to Minneapolis. The temps were in the single digits, and finding a shelter that wasn't filled with trash, heat lamps that were not working properly, and people pacing up and down the platform yelling and dealing was horrifying. When the train got to our stop, we entered the first car and noticed the insanity going on in the middle cars, as the officer had mentioned. Got to the next stop for our transfer to Minneapolis, and there was an open car with a woman pushing trash out of the car to the outside to clear a way to get in. It was awful and unbelievable. We walked up and noted that we had had a 48-minute wait. We walked down the platform to find a shelter and spoke with a kind man who told us about the stop. He told us, be careful, because there were homeless, drug-induced people always there, either waiting to ride or just hanging out. As we looked for a sheltered spot, because they were all filled, we saw a small piece of garbage in the corner of one shelter in flames. We eventually shared a shelter with a guy that worked at MSP. He filled us in on things that with the surrounding people and how to be safe and not to look vulnerable, but to appear confident that you could take a problem person down if needed to. That's when I felt absolutely terrified. When we eventually
how much longer?
Just one more paragraph. When we eventually boarded the first car to Minneapolis, we once again noted the middle cars and the chaos. Homeless people sleeping under coverings and people passed out. I was relieved when we made our connection and on our way back to the MOA in a clean car, feeling much safer with very few passengers. We've ridden this before since it started operating to many events from Minneapolis and St. Paul, but I will never again get on the LRT, and I hope that you do the same.
Two things. The people who brought us light rail were incapable of reading their own tea leaves. By that I mean the left has successfully gone a long way to destroying urban America. And they're not capable of acknowledging that their policies are destructive. So thus, you get light rail and the consequences of it almost immediately becoming just another entitlement. People don't pay, they treat it poorly, there's no proprietorship, there's criminal activity. All of these brought to you by the mystery and the way the mystery has failed to lead urban America. The second point, I thought a little teeny bit of fentanyl was deadly. I guess I don't understand fentanyl use. If that was fentanyl in the silver foil, I would have gotten immediately off the train. I wouldn't want to have been exposed to any fentanyl. So I guess I don't understand how fentanyl works, but I've been told and I've read endlessly that small amounts of it are deadly.
Yeah. It's actually smoked a lot with marijuana mixed in, and you don't die from it. It's somewhat of an urban myth, you know, the thing, if you touch it, you're going to die.
I'm not sure it is. The cops are carrying...
That's called an abundance of caution. John's right. Yeah. And it's smoked, and it's also through a needle, you know. So you can... sniff
it's
it.
Mixed with other drugs. It,
there's all sorts of ways of taking that. The problem with fentanyl, if you're a user, is you never know how potent your dose is. It's like buying LSD. You just don't know until you try it.
Well, be that as it may, and in any event, light rail is a mess. It was fated to be a mess. But the people who brought it to us, if they saw that, certainly can't admit to having seen that.
Right.
These are their policies, and they're wrong, and we're stuck with them. And now they want to do it again, extend it to the north. And the figures you read will all be wrong, and they're all brought to you by unelected people. And it will cost
and
you
Met Council, Met Council pushing this heavily. Met Council should have to take the train every single day for as long as they're on the Met Council. Every day, no matter what, get on the train. Every day.
Not only Met Council, both mayors and city councils. Yep. They should not be allowed to own a car. They must ride the light rail.
And I'm talking unannounced, with no protection, no photographers, no press.
Yeah.
You know, live up to what you've pushed down everybody's throat.
Should we take a white privilege test today?
It's just they're just so intent on blowing
S-loads of money for complete nonsense that turns to shit. And this has turned to shit.
Remember, good leadership used to be, there had to be a time in this country when good leadership was a public figure deciding we can't afford to spend this money. We should not spend this money. That was good leadership. We don't have that anymore.
Joe, the gal that wrote that letter that Chris read, that's a little different perspective than the one we got a few weeks ago when Met Council members actually did ride on the train for a press opportunity.
Surrounded by law enforcement.
And cameras and reporters. And yeah.
You might not find this problem in Sioux Falls.
Probably not.
Minnesota business owners are paying too much in taxes. I'm afraid we're only going to be paying more. You don't have to take my word for it. The Tax Foundation has just released its state business tax climate index, and Minnesota's near the bottom. We're the 45th worst tax climate. Well, let's go for the record. Let's be the 50th.
Yeah, if we're going to be bad, let's
be
really
bad. Let's be all the way bad. There's five states that are beating us to be bad.
We got work to do.
When you expand or relocate your business to Sioux Falls, you're going to be basking in the second best tax climate in the nation. And they're probably trying to be the first best tax climate in the nation. That's one reason, no matter what size business you own, maybe you're thinking this year it's time to move or time to expand, you can increase your profits in Sioux Falls. They've got the proof at SiouxFallsDevelopment.com. That's one word. SiouxFallsDevelopment.com, and then you might as well, when you're there, enjoy safer streets, award-winning schools, short commutes, a growing downtown, a pro-business attitude. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Are all the attractive reasons to make your move, and they've got a motivated workforce ready to go. Escape the high taxes of Minnesota. I'm sorry to see you go. I will miss you, but I wouldn't blame you in a New York minute. Escape the high taxes of Minnesota by planning your expansion or relocation to Sioux Falls. Check out SiouxFallsDevelopment.com.
You know, the investment game can be awfully tricky, especially in these volatile times. And that's why you need the best and also somebody that you can trust. And that's why I rely on Josh Arnold. We know him as Mr. Money Talk around these parts, and he's here for you. So give him a call today for that free 48-minute no obligation consultation by dialing 952-925-5608. 952-925-5608. Josh has been at this a long time with a track record of success, and he's here to help you. So give him a call today. No obligation. That's right. No obligation. It's absolutely free. 952-925-5608. And tell them you heard about them here on the Garage Logic Podcast.
Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a security investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice.
Chris Reavers is a paid endorser.
This guy wears many hats, just not indoors. Joe Soucheray.
President's Day is, it's over, but the President's Sale still in full swing at Maple Grove Lock and Safe for Liberty Safes, and we still have time to save up to $380 on the Liberty USA 48 and 50 models. Both feature level 3 security with 60 minutes of fire protection. That's at 1200 degrees. That's pretty good for an hour there. And the sale also includes the power accessory kit bundle. You can check out all the details. They pop up right away when you click on MapleGroveLockAndSafe.com. The combination of Liberty Safe and Maple Grove Lock and Safe, that means you're going to go home a happy customer, knowing that you got the best safe for your money from, let's face it, the state's best safe showroom. Rich, he's the owner. He knows what's up, and he's going to work with you personally to find the best unit to fit your needs. Rich is also, keep this in mind, if you're a GLer, you got to let him know, because he's offered GLers some deals that others just might not know about. That includes 15% off all quick combination and key vaults, a must for every home that has handguns and children or frequent grandchildren, nieces, nephews, etc. You get the drift. Check out the President's Day sale at Maple Grove Lock and Safe, 6901 East Fish Lake Road. And like I mentioned, the website, MapleGroveLockAndSafe.com.
There's a front page story on the Star Tribune today that really intrigued me, and it's a proposed bill in the legislature that would give the White Earth Band of Ojibwe would give them land back. It would give them the state-owned 160,000-acre White Earth State Forest. And this would be given to the tribe by 2029. I'm unfamiliar with the White Earth State Forest.
It would be south and west
of Bemidji.
Yeah, I would call it more west. It's between Highway 2 on the north and 200 on the south. And yeah, just slightly south, but mostly west of Bemidji, correct.
It includes parts of Manoman, Becker, and Clearwater County. Well, here's what intrigued me about this. This is proposed by State Senator Mary Kunish, DFL New Brighton, and Representative Aisha Gomez, DFL Minneapolis. They put forward a bill that would give state-owned portions of the 160,000-acre White Earth State Forest to the tribe by 2029. The proposal would also give the White Earth Band the right of first refusal to buy any tax-forfeited land in the forest. This is an acknowledgement of White Earth Nation's sovereignty and their inherent right to manage their lands as best as they see fit, said Kunish, who is a Standing Rock Lakota descendant. Tribe Chair Michael Fairbanks did not return phone calls seeking comment. He recently thanked Gomez on Facebook, saying the bill will return 155,000 acres of our homeland. Okay, here's what intrigued me. This is just, they didn't consult anybody.
I know.
They didn't talk to the DNR. They didn't talk to the local communities. They didn't do anything. They just, these two urban legislators, both Mysterians, just came up with the idea that let's just give this land back to the White Earth. Now, there might be a great deal of merit in considering that and what would the result be and how would this work. But none of that seems to have been part of this decision-making process. They just, out of whole cloth, said, hey, let's give this 100, add 60,000 acres to Mille Lacs. It'd be that size. Let's give this 160,000 acres back to the Ojibwe. Okay, to what end?
It's about 155 out of 160, but yeah, I get the gist. But you're right, urban Mysterians writing the bill. That's incredible.
Minnesota Department of Natural Resources leaders said they couldn't say exactly how much land would be transferred.
I don't know anything about this. A lot of roads in there, too, Dale.
They don't know what would happen to 65 miles of roads and 70 miles of public trails.
I don't know.
We're aware of the bill.
Where'd you hear this anyway?
They say, well, we weren't consulted or involved. Eric Evans, a spokesman for the DNR, said, we're seeking information from the bill author. Well, that'd be Aisha Gomez and Kunith. I'm sorry, let's get her name correctly. The bill's authors are
Aisha Gomez
and Mary Kunish. Mary's descendant of the Lakota. Okay, but no one has. They just came up with this. They didn't talk to anybody. There's roads in there. There's private homes. There's towns. There's public trails. It's a state park. So I guess what would happen? I guess they would still. The public, apparently, did they consider the public?
No, not whatsoever. Here's where I'm at. Before they shouldn't have written the bill at all. They should have started discussion. That's what we need. We need discussion, and a lot of it, because the park is within the reservation, or most of it is. Okay, so yeah. It's worthy of discussion. But like you said, there's homeowners, there's landowners,
home and landowners who live in or near White Earth State Forest said they are worried they could lose access not just to hunting and recreation grounds, but to their properties if public roads are closed or transferred? It's a question we have, said Dan Wilson, who lives on the shore of Long Lost Lake at the edge of the state forest. I'd like the state to research this thoroughly so if anything moves forward, it's done with deliberation and input and concern for all people in the area.
What
a novel concept
wow.
that is. The ideal would be we could work together to make sure this wonderful place is accessible and taken care of. Well, no kidding. You two crackpots, you two urban ne'er-do-wells, you just came up with this and just said, let's throw this at the wall and see if it sticks. This is what we're led by. This is why nobody apparently has really cared how they vote. You just end up with characters like this who this is a complete violation of anything that would even reasonably approach legislative contemplation. There's been no effort on the part of the bill's authors to wonder what the ramifications of this would be.
I believe when asked, the direct quote was, details.
Kunish, who was the first indigenous woman to serve in the state Senate, which is also important to be the first.
Yep.
Got to be. First of anything is Trump's competence.
Absolutely.
He just got to be the first. Said the tribe has assured her that the land will continue to be open for all hunting and fishing. So she either got an email or a phone call and said, don't worry about it.
It's just read the
next two paragraphs there where you left off.
There will not be any taking of private land. They're not going to cut off access to any road, she said. You know what, though, Kunish? We don't know that.
She said, keep going.
She said the bill will be amended to say that White Earth State Forest will remain open to recreational activities.
Here's what I'm seeing. A few people sitting around a fire, each of them about 4 to 7 drinks in, just spitballing bullshit.
Yep.
That's what this is. I got it. That's covered. Don't worry about it.
Not natives sitting around the fire. Legislators.
No. Urban Mysterians. Yeah.
Who are at the cutting edge of this preposterous idea that we should stop and pause before everything to note that we're on stolen land. I think, Kenny, didn't you see that on the back of a bus?
That was actually our buddy Tom, who was down visiting his kid, and he's on 46, and it looked like Hiawatha to me, or Minnehaha down by the park. And I guess there's bus signs now.
It's on the back of the bus. It says, let us remember we are on
stolen land.
Stolen land. Well, then get the damn bus off the street.
Joe, we need to give back the entire state of Minnesota. Well, you know what? All 48 states need to go back.
Don't for a minute think this isn't what this is.
And that's why these two urban Mysterians are throwing this up against the wall, because it's already happened with the Upper Sioux Agency. Mm-hmm. They shut down that state park. And after last month, the middle of last month, you can't get in. It's closed. No more.
Mm-hmm.
1,400 acres there.
I think people would certainly be accepting of...
talking about
discussions.
It. Yeah. The adult thing. The adult approach.
But you two crackpots who just think this is the way to go, it's not the way to go.
Quick, Joe, it's a Democratic-controlled House and Senate.
So, because I don't remember if this was an on-air or off-air, the quote from the one resident in the area talking about it being closed now to the public, but that took place, correct, already? Is that what you said, Kenny?
Yeah, Upper Sioux Agency closed last month.
Okay. So was that going to happen regardless of this, or did that happen because
that
this was coming?
That was just part of the deal, I'm saying that our two urban Mysterians saw that passed and it went through, and they're like, okay, well, let's move on to White Earth, and then they're going to move to the next one and the next one.
Well, here it is. Last year, lawmakers voted to close Upper Sioux Agency State Park in southwestern Minnesota and return the land to the Dakota. That transfer, though, involved a much smaller piece of land, 1,400 acres, which is nothing in an earth this size, and did not include as many roads, trails, or other public amenities. And then we get to the part where, well, now you transfer this kind of ideology or this thinking to the white earth, and that's where you get home and landowners who live in or near white earth state forests saying, well, wait a minute, what about our access to hunting, recreation in our own damn house? If you close the public roads, and then we get the crackpots don't know what to do at this point. So the newspaper found somebody to quote that said, oh, don't worry about it. We're not going to do that. Well, we don't know what you're going to do because you haven't done any adult planning.
And you refuse to answer questions.
So we don't know. They didn't even get a call back from the tribal chairman.
No.
Who might? The tribal chairman might think this is stupid. We don't know.
But there's no denying that the natives were done wrong and played for suckers when these treaties were signed in the 1800s, and a lot of them, we went back on them, and you know, we went back on our word and stole land. But a lot of time has passed, and there's been a lot of development, and a lot of people living there. And if you're going to throw something out like this, this is years of discussion. You can't just throw a bill out like this and hope to sneak it through.
It would be a great way for the Mysterians to, with one broad stroke, end a great part of Minnesota life, which is all the people who own Lakeshore in this state.
Yeah.
It would just be, in one fell swoop, they could eliminate that. And think how much they could save the earth by getting rid of all those motorboats with their gasoline tanks. And whatever.
And
this could go on forever.
And to me, what you just said sounds absurd, but you got to know that's the plan.
Nothing is absurd anymore, Kenny. That's
you.
The problem.
Yes. Yeah,
nothing
that's the
is
point.
Absurd anymore with these people.
The
nothing.
Absurd is the new norm.
Yep. So put that into perspective, because you use Mille Lacs, right?
Well, Mille Lacs, I just roughly call Mille Lacs 100,000 acres.
So here's what I did. I just quickly looked up how many, and this usually gets us into trouble, so I'm being very careful, but I looked it up. How many acres is St. Paul? And it gave me, St. Paul is 56 square miles, roughly.
Right.
And 160,000 acres is roughly 250 square miles.
Okay. It's a big
it's
area.
It's a huge chunk of land.
I mean, they started with 1,400 acres in the Sioux Park.
Yeah.
And now they, well, what the hell? Look at this white earth deal. Let's and they just, out of the blue, they came up with this.
That's five times
listen, you dummies. I'm going to throw something at you.
Talk to me.
Cold Spring, whatever the hell it's called there in South Minneapolis, and the rivers, the Minnesota River and the Mississippi, where they meet, they're below Fort Snelling. Native Americans have been meeting there and trading there peaceably for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before white men came along. We need to give all of Minneapolis, St. Paul, hell, the seven-county whole area back to the natives.
The University of Minnesota is on native land.
Everything, all of Minneapolis, all of St. Paul, all of the suburbs, it all needs to go back. And let's write the bill. It needs to happen this year.
Do you think they'll look at the dysfunction and go, keep it?
Now, as absurd as that sounds,
there's nothing absurd, Kenny.
You know they're thinking about
There's nothing absurd anymore.
These
are people that are intending to destroy this country and have a new country.
Let's do it all. Atlantic to the Pacific. Let's do it all.
See, and
all
of Alaska. Sea?
Absolutely.
The purple waves of grain?
Absolutely.
Purple. Is it amber?
Amber waves of grain.
That's right.
The hell kind of grain was I thinking?
Vikings, you're thinking football.
You want to take a white privilege test? Well, first we're going to have a brief newscast from John Haidt.
Okay.
All right.
Here's a man who spends hours in hardware stores sifting through the nuts and bolts of life. Joe Souchere.
Well, based upon what Joe's been telling us the last couple of weeks, it's time to get your affairs in order. So go with the best. Switch from your big national bank and switch to my friends at North American Banking Company. It's banking done differently. I have made the switch, and I know that if you do as well, you will be very happy. Whether you're a business owner looking for adjusting with your family's finances, it doesn't matter. They get it. They realize that there's no shortage of banking options in the Twin Cities. So if you're tired of just being a number to your big national bank, then check out my friends at North American Banking Company. They've been at it since 1998, and they made a promise to deliver a better banking experience for their customers, where you know your banker, and they know you. And while a lot has changed since then, this commitment to being a true community bank in the Twin Cities, that has not. They have six locations: Roseville, 50th in France, Hastings, Woodbury, Shoreview, and their new location in Maple Grove. They offer the same online and mobile banking options as the other banks, but you are going to get the unparalleled service of a community bank. Visit their website today, nabankco.com, to learn more. That's nabankco.com. North American Banking Company, member FDIC, is an equal housing lender. Joe?
Here's John Haidt.
Thank you, Joe. This news is brought to you by North American Banking Company. It's Super Tuesday. Presidential primaries in lots of places, including right here in Minnesota. The polls in Minnesota close at 8. If you get in line before 8, you can vote. Latest poll done by our colleagues downstairs at KSTP and Survey USA says that 63% say they are either certain or probably voting in the primary today in Minnesota. 43% of likely primary voters say they plan to vote in the Republican primary. 38% plan to vote in the Democratic primary. 18% say they're not certain about which primary they'll vote in. On the Republican ballot, 79% of those responding say they'll vote for Donald Trump, 15% for Nikki Haley, 3% supporting another candidate, and 4% undecided. In the Democratic primary, 76% said they'll vote for Joe Biden, 7% for Dean Phillips, 6% for another candidate, and 10% undecided.
If I remember this afternoon, I might as well vote because it won't be a hassle. Nobody will be there.
Minnesota House of Representatives passed changes to the state's updated school resource law yesterday, sending the bill to the Senate for consideration. This is more than 6 months after all that controversy over the new law started. The issue still remaining one of the key topics at the legislature. A DFL-authored bill moved through the House of Representatives committees and passed a floor vote yesterday with all but 8 lawmakers voting in favor. Several GOP lawmakers have also introduced their version of a fix for the SRO law, although it hasn't advanced anywhere in the DFL-controlled legislature. The main difference between the DFL and GOP bills is that the DFL bill would require law enforcement agencies with an SRO program to have a written SRO policy. The GOP bill does not include that requirement, but features training reimbursement for agencies. Some groups have also defended the current law, opposed a fix to clarify the law, saying SRO shouldn't be able to restrain students unless there's a threat of imminent danger. But law enforcement agencies, remember, suspended the programs amid questions over the updated law. Ramsey County plan could see streetcars returning to St. Paul streets. Right now, there are 3 options for a proposal to better connect West 7th Street with Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport and the Mall of America. 2 of those options are for streetcars, and each has a preliminary cost estimate of over $2 billion.
That's with a B.
And that will become, it'll just be the same situation, you know, having the light rail.
What's wrong with buses?
Nothing, and there is a bus proposal, which is much cheaper and much quicker.
The third option, as Joe just said, is a bus rapid transit line with a cost of about $121 million, which is considerably less than $2 billion.
I'm even questioning the bus proposal. Why not just crank out a few more buses and keep just what the hell? What's going on here?
Because good leadership fails to realize that not spending money is important.
I don't take delight in your plight, Joe, but I'm just curious. Would this help maybe with your commute to the station every day?
Wouldn't affect me.
Could you drive down to the streetcar and then take that to the light rail and drop you off right here?
I guess you could.
They don't intersect.
No, the streetcar would be independent of the light rail lines.
I see. Okay.
Back to Joe's money point, Ramsey County Commissioner Rafael Ortega said the cost would be paid by Ramsey County, and the other half the cost would be paid by Ramsey County. The other half would come from the federal government.
Well, the federal government doesn't have any money. That's your money.
Yes.
Exactly. Are the buses overflowing now with people from West 7th going to the airport?
I've yet to see someone standing on the corner of 7th and Randolph, for example, clutching a suitcase and
saying, damn it, I
guess I can't get to Los Angeles today. I have no way to get to the
airport. You got the roller. You got the carry-on.
Yeah, you're waiting, and there's no train. I guess I can't go to the airport.
So what you're saying is I don't ride the streetcar. But if I did,
right? Jeez, it's just a shame.
Yeah,
beep beep. It's just a shame.
It's that trolley on Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Yes. Ding ding,
oh
ding
my
ding,
God,
ding
it
ding.
Is. There's Joe hanging onto the side of the.
No, the streetcars would look like mini light rail trains.
They're enclosed,
and it'd be a shorter. You know, be like three cars instead of eight or whatever the hell they got now that are empty.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a break scheduled here.
Can we take a quick break? We do not have a break.
I need to take a break.
Oh, John needs to go answer the door.
When I come back, how's that?
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's good. Yeah, that's fine.
We have an emergency.
Let's see what happens here.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Hey, the hell with
letting us know.
I'm glad I got up at 7, you bastards.
Well, you probably have some stuff that'll hang over.
Ooh, the Twins game's on.
Oh, good.
Already?
The Earth is not your mother. The Joe Soucheray Show.
Well, continuing our talk about money. The Park Board of Minneapolis spent $750,000 to produce 1 week of skating ice. But I see a problem here that could have saved them the $750,000.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. For almost 2 months, park workers got up before dawn to flood the 45 ice rinks in parks throughout Minneapolis, only to see their work melt away in the daytime. Isn't that the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result?
I'm picturing the guy with the garden hose. You know, he's got her. It's already 36 degrees, you know, at 8:45 in the morning.
And you got to hand it to them. They stuck with it.
Did they look at the forecast?
Apparently
at
not. They stuck with it until a proper freeze finally arrived near the end of January, and you got a week. Lindale Farmstead in South Minneapolis opened on Jan 17, followed by every other rink for the next 3 days. But the cold didn't last. Almost as soon as the skaters laced up, the ice melted again. Within a week, all rinks were slush. The cost for 8 days of outdoor skating, hockey, and broomball was $750,187, or about $95,000 per day, according to the Star Tribune.
Wow.
Now some parks leaders are pondering the future of the city's much-loved outdoor rink system in a warming climate because they understand we don't have winter anymore. Last year we had winter.
Got it.
But there'll be no more winter. So
no more.
Maybe you could figure out how to save that $750,000. Becky Alper, she's a parks commissioner, said, "I think this is a wake-up call. No, I think you should have told your guys to stand down when the weather temperature says it's going to be 45 degrees the next day. Don't get up at 4 in the morning to flood. You could have saved yourself some dough."
$750,000's a lot of money, too.
Wow. Let's plan so we're better serving the public. Well, you can't serve the public if you're trying to create an ice rink and it's not cold. Don't bother. You're not serving the public. Alper herself is an ice skater. And she's asked the board's recreation committee to gather data, including how much the system spends on ice rinks annually for how many days of use. That'd be a lot of money if you got ice all year long.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Was that, well, obviously it's compensation for employees and whatnot, but
amazing.
And of course, the record-breaking temperatures were caused by climate change. It's just a given now. In most newspapers, particularly the Star Tribune, they throw in El Nino, but the record-breaking temperatures were caused by climate change and El Nino. They're admitting that this year's temperature should not be the benchmark for any kind of year-to-year prediction.
Oh, really?
Thank you.
But the state is steadily warming with the climate patterns morphing to resemble Iowa's. Okay, apparently they don't have outdoor skating in Iowa.
Tell me that again next year when it's 32 below for 3 weeks straight.
Or this April when you could get about three blizzards back to back.
You see deeper in the story, they're talking about instead of cutting back, spending actually more money and getting refrigerated rinks.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not going to cost $750,000.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Alper and Commissioner Billy Menz have suggested that park staff consider the feasibility of incorporating refrigerated rinks into new plans. I've been really pushing the board that if we're going to act boldly for climate change, we have to act boldly in the area of recreation. And this is a place where we could do that, said Menz, because without acting boldly, we're going to have no ice to skate on.
Wait a minute.
Now, I noticed, I'll get to you in a moment in the back. I noticed that maybe St. Paul was a bit brighter than Minneapolis, because I monitor the Groveland rink all summer long. They put up two great rinks.
Winter
long. And they put up two great rinks. Somebody, some kind-hearted soul's got his own Zamboni and the whole deal. They never once flooded Groveland this year.
They probably looked at the forecast.
Maybe once they did. I shouldn't say they never. But they didn't repeatedly get up at 4 in the morning knowing damn well it would be gone by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm not reading this type of story in St. Paul.
Do you think, I got my tinfoil hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this was done intentionally?
No, they're not that smart.
Do you drive by Des Noyer on Pelham?
Yes.
Did they flood that?
I don't. That was flooded, but I don't think repeatedly. I think they caught on.
I was down there, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't too... Oh, the 14th, February? 10th? What, doesn't matter. The Diamond Lake rink, not only was it not flooded, but the boards had been taken down already. And then we drove past where I used to live, Sibley Park, and we lived there starting in 96 or 7 through what, just 2000, what was it, guys, 21 that I moved?
21, yeah.
22.
Listen to this.
And some years, Sibley didn't have ice at all.
Right.
Some years it was less. It was great. It was all winter. And some years it was half a month. It varies every single year.
Refrigerated rinks would cost $6 to $8 million, and that would include a canopy to provide ice extending shade. So what do you got, 45 parks with rinks?
Oof.
What if you put a refrigerated rink in each park? What's 6 times 45?
Who's 70?
6 times 5 is, that's 200. That'd be a quarter of $1 billion.
Look at the picture on the jump.
Mm-hmm. I just have a printed copy in front of me. I don't have the picture.
The guy, Minneapolis Park Board employee Sean, in shorts, sprays the ice rink at McRae Park in late December.
Okay.
let's just think about that.
Let's analyze
for a
that for a minute. Yeah, look, yeah, pal, yeah. If you're in shorts,
right, yeah,
trying design. To freeze a rink, you're forgetting a step. you're forgetting what the temperature should be.
I didn't see
that. And people in Minneapolis should react in horror and comedy at this. I'm afraid they won't. But you're telling me that every night at 10 o'clock, you'd realize when you went to bed that it was going to be 45 degrees the next day, but you still got up at 4 in the morning to flood the rink.
Hey.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with you?
They got a job to do.
Yeah.
They're committed to the bit.
It's like being in the Army. Everything's FUBAR. It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have time
for the white privilege test today. We're going to take it tomorrow.
Oh, we've only been doing this an hour. You know who gets it right with ice rinks, Joe?
Huh.
It's the mom and dads that put them in their backyard. Yeah. And what do? They put down a layer of plastic, creating a bowl-like mm-hmm. surface. So when the ice melts, the water stays put.
There's a refrigerated rink in St. Paul at the corner of Jefferson and Victoria.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that getting much use this year.
Yeah.
But that and this is the way it's going to be from now on. There's never going to be winter again.
Yeah, there's no more winter.
No more outdoor
skating.
No
more winter. And it will never snow in the Sierras again after this year. We had our last winter last year. Apparently, California is getting its last winter this year.
Hey, okay. Did you do ice outs today? Was I not paying attention? Because the lake I live on here, it's an environmental lake. Oh. That the ice went out on Sunday.
I don't count your lake.
The ice is out, so that's the official ice.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Kenny. We got an email from Mr. B yesterday around 3 o'clock. Joe, just want to let you know, here in Palmer Township on Rush Lake, yep. we had an ice out.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's fine, but I don't care about your lake.
That counts.
That does not count.
We care, Palmer, or Jim. Oh, who was it?
Mr. B, we care.
Outstate lakes I'll accept are Gull, Leech, and Mille Lacs.
The lakes Joe has been to are the ones he'll accept. He can find them on a map. So
I don't want some rinky-dink pothole calling me up and telling me that the ice is off our pond.
GLJoe@GarageLogic.com.
My garage door guy is the whole family. Precision Garage Door of the Twin Cities in western Wisconsin. A couple of interesting points about these guys. They're a GLer own family. They're a GL family that is the operation of Precision Garage Door, but they don't charge more for weekend visits. That's crucial because a lot of times garage doors pick the wrong times to go out. And they most often have the parts they need in the truck, so you're not going to get that spiel about, damn it, I'm almost done, but I got to run back downtown or wherever the headquarters is to get a bolt. Oftentimes I'll say, well, here, I have bolts. Let's look through them. But that doesn't save any time. They'll save you the time. They want to get the job done the first time. They do the rollers and springs and openers. They'll fix the app on your phone or show you how to get it. They'll do a new garage door with your consultation. You can pick out a great garage door. They're really, really good people. Put this telephone into your, put this number into your telephone contacts. 612-263-6985. Or find these great people at precisiondoormn.com. That's precisiondoormn.com. We don't need another break, do we?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I can tell you that only because they come to us from worldwidewaftage.com. The traveling Lymans, who are currently holed up in Lake Las Vegas, Nevada.
They've been there for a while, haven't they?
Well, soon to split for other environs. It was on this day.
March 5th, sir.
In 1814, Norman W. Kitson was born in Sorel, Canada. When he arrived in Minnesota in 1834, Kitson made money by developing trade between St. Paul and the Red River and served as a legislator and as mayor of St. Paul. Late in life, he built a mansion in St. Paul. I don't know where that would be. On a trail that led to town, to accommodate those accustomed to following the trail, Kitson left his front and back doors open for people to pass through. Well, now I know where it was. The Cathedral of St. Paul was later built on the site.
Wow. What year was that?
1814.
You know,
but it was in later years when he did that.
We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson the mighty Mississippi.
On this
took a little bacon, took a little beans.
That's right, John.
On this day, the British in the town of New Orleans.
On this day.
Well, we fired our guns and the British kept it coming.
They did keep coming, yes. On this day in 1852, farmers in Benton County.
That was brilliant.
From the state's first county agricultural society, Oliver H. Kelly, who later found the National Grange, was one of 10 charter members. They shared information about seeds, fruit, and farming. That's what happened there. And then the very next year on this day, 1853, Minnesota's territorial legislature incorporated the St. Paul Mutual Insurance Company, forerunner of the giant St. Paul companies, the state's oldest business operation.
Wow.
And I'm going to skip that one. There's too many counties. On this day in 2020, yes. This is an important one that affected us all.
March? Oh, was this the shutdown?
March, on this day, what is it, March 5th?
March 5th. No, it was
the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in Minnesota was reported.
In Carver County, was it not?
And then everything went to hell.
Yeah.
Everything went to hell.
That was 4 years ago.
And there are people, I see them every day, still wearing masks.
But we live and let live in GL.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
GLers, I'm sorry for the short show. But I got to get my foot checked out. I made the appointment 3-4 months ago. It's the only time I can see the guy. So I'll see you later. I'll see you tomorrow. I might have my foot amputated. I don't know. There's a piece in the paper
today.
But
you can let the GLers know that if a procedure has to take place, you will hold off until the golf season's over.
I don't know what we're going to find that out today. How many weeks? Here's the key. How many weeks does the mayor have to be off his feet? Because I have a number in mind. Anything over that, I can't do it.
What about getting to work? That's what I'm concerned about.
They got Ubers.
Can you wear black socks over a wooden peg?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Wow.
Jeez, God.
That was very funny, but also mean.
There was a piece in the paper today about a woman. Was it in the paper?
Yeah, she's all better now.
And she had her foot amputated due to pain.
Her name was Peg, right?
I don't know. She's all set now.
Hey, full show video and audio is waiting for you to sign up for a town council membership.
Got my peg on.
If I get one of those fake ones, I want that big spring foot.
Right.
You know, the leaping around.
The bionic foot.
Yeah, you know the drill. GarageLogic.com. Sign up for the town council.
Does that mean you'd be pegged?
That's right, Kenny.
Wow.
That's terrible.
We'll see you later.
Boy, over now, huh?
It is time once again that we check in with our guy, Mr. Money Talk. Josh Arnold is with us once again here in Garage Logic. And now's the time for you to do the same. So do not delay. Do it exactly what I did and pick up that phone and give Mr. Money Talk a call today by dialing 952-925-5608. That number once again is 952-925-5608. You call that number, you get Josh, and he is there for you for that free 48-minute financial consultation. And he's on the line with us once again here in Garage Logic. And I know today, Josh, you would like to discuss the Fed, interest rates, and of course, everybody is worried about Apple right now.
Well, I don't know whether everybody, Chris, is worried about Apple, but I'm one of those people who's not worried about Apple. But there are an awful lot of other people who are concerned about Apple's business and the direction of the stock. Apple definitely is in a market correction phase, not yet in a bear market. Apple is down 10% from its recent high, which puts it in a correction phase. People are worried about Apple's business prospects going forward, particularly given Apple has recently shelved their EV project, something that has been ongoing for almost 10 years, but it is a project that I did not think would ever see the light of day. My belief is that Apple would not come out with an Apple car, but Apple would use this project to try to dominate the dashboard and sell their, we'll say, software and even some of their hardware to make a bigger dent into car manufacturers', we'll say, dashboard or that big screen computer that now shows up on most cars. Meantime, today there is a research report that said Apple's phone sales in China were down 24%. Oh, that's a big, big number. But people only focus in on the headline and not on the actual paragraph that follows it. Yes, Apple's China sales are down 24% for the first 6 weeks of this year compared to last year. But last year there was plenty of pent-up demand given the end of 2022. China was going through a shutdown over COVID, not to mention some strikes at several of Apple's manufacturing partners' plants. Apple is still one of the leading phone sellers in China, and some of this news is old. So phone sales in China have been slowing, and that has been well known. So this news is not new. it's old, but people think it's new. Another issue has to do with the European Union fining Apple a significant amount of money. This particular fine was spurred by Spotify making some complaints against Apple and Apple's and their position on Apple's App Store. Meantime, Apple says Spotify really does not have a case, and there is going to be an appeal to this fine, so it's still going to be a long way from going. I do think that the sell-off in Apple is more due to the selling that Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway did by selling 1% of their shares late last year, and this was announced in Berkshire's 13F filing, and there is concern that Berkshire will sell more shares. Meantime, Berkshire does own 905.5 million shares of Apple, which represents 5.9% of Apple's shares outstanding, and also represents almost 50% position relative to Berkshire's equity portfolio. So it's still a significant portion of Berkshire Hathaway. And I think it's going to remain a significant portion of Berkshire. Right now, this pullback in Apple does represent, at least to me, a buying opportunity. The biggest thing, though, that does have people concerned is Jay Powell's Humphrey Hawkins testimony, which will take place on Wednesday and Thursday. And the question will remain, oh, my goodness, what is he going to say about the direction of interest rates? Is the Fed actually going to be cutting rates or continue on pause or even raising rates? My sense, the Fed is going to continue their higher for longer mantra, and the likelihood of cutting rates, I think, is pretty slim right now, though the Fed might cut 25 basis points in May or maybe in June, and then not cut again until after the election, unless something significant happens to slow the economy. So right now, we're in a period of time where the market might pull back, and that's why we continue to maintain our asset allocation strategy of keeping up to 30% in cash to take advantage of any pullbacks that are going to happen.
Excellent advice, as always, Mr. Money Talk. You heard him, GLers. Now's the time for you to pick up the phone and make the call for that free 48-minute financial consultation by dialing 952-925-5608, where you always get straight talk and never, ever sugar-coated advice. Josh, as always, thank you so much for the time and the chat. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday.
Look forward to it, Chris. Thank you.
Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a security investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice.
Chris Reavers is a paid endorser.